Hey friends, welcome to this episode. Sorry to jump in. We had some audio issues recording this one. We're very sorry, of course, but we're still very funny. So we're putting it up anyway, and have a great time.
Who do you call
when all that you see
are actors on your television singing off key?
What savvy, well-versed heroes can settle the score? Once more with TV.
Welcome, Scream Teens and Drama Queens, to Once More with TV, a podcast celebrating TV musical episodes from the sublime to the subprime.
And definitively ranking them using every theater child's worst nightmare, math.
I'm your co-host, Alex Kovnatsky, he, him, and I am an Evil Dead the Musical apologist.
And I'm your co-host, Liza Trushel, she, her, and I'm a teen television enthusiast.
Ooh, I think we've got that in common, Liza. This week we watched Riverdale Season 2, Episode 18, entitled Chapter 31, I think.
Baffling. Yeah. I guess the first, I don't know, I guess they're doing like by number of episodes. But
right, yeah. And this is the first Riverdale musical episode. It came out in 2018. Liza, what is your relationship to Riverdale? I know you have a long historic relationship to this show.
Yeah, I have two rules, okay? And I broke one of them for this podcast. I think I should be commended for that. My first rule, the one that I broke, is that I've never watched this show sober before. That's never happened.
Honestly, a great rule.
It was very strange. You can see why I have that rule. Sort of delighted to say it didn't really decrease my enjoyment that much. I still had a great time. Things only made a little bit more sense. the second rule that I did not break is that I very strictly do not watch consecutive episodes of this show. Nothing backed back, never in order. I often actually skip the previously on because I don't want clues.
Interesting.
This show has a way, and I'm sure you noticed this, the show has a way of dumping enormous amounts of exposition into a 20-second scene and then moving on. And I find it much more enjoyable when I have no idea what anyone is referring to.
Yes. As someone who didn't understand anything anyone was referring to, it is a delightful way to watch the show. I think you're right. It might be the only way to watch this show.
I highly recommend it. If there's anybody listening who has not watched Riverdale, just don't start at episode one. Jump in on season three, watch one episode there, go back to season two. Up to season five. Like, just pick episodes where the log line seems like inexplicable and go for it.
Yeah, that's probably really narrowing down the different episodes there. All seem inexplicable to me.
I don't know, dude. I watched this whole episode where Jughead is in a bunker and he's like writing a comic that's creating an alternate universe. It's crazy.
Yeah, it should be said, for those who don't know, Riverdale is based off of the Archie comics. Kind of. I mean, in name,
very
really.
Barely. We took some IP to a pitch office at the CW, and we said, don't worry, it's IP, it'll be fine.
Yeah,
and then we threw it all out the window immediately.
Ran with it, yeah. Just went bonkers with it. Kind of appropriately, the first musical episode they've ever done is based off of Carrie the Musical. Liza, what do you know about Carrie the Musical?
Not a ton. I remembered a couple of the songs. I remembered sort of it happening and it immediately flopping. That's my recollection of the Carrie musical.
Yes. Carrie, obviously the amazing Stephen King book and film. Actually, I've never read the book, so I can't speak to that, but I love the film. And
the film's great, the first one. The remake was not the Chloe Grace Moretz remake.
Right.
Yes, right. I know. It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite. We much prefer the Brian De Palma.
Of course.
Sarah Lawrence alum.
Shout out.
Hey.
that remake of Carrie the movie came and went, but not as quickly as Carrie the musical actually came and went on Broadway. It was in production for 7 years and it closed after 5 performances. Yikes.
That's brutal. Oh no, that's like less than 1 week.
Yeah. Yeah. It had 16 previews But that, you know,
oh my God.
5 official performances before it went. It was like, I think, $7 million in production. May just be the biggest Broadway flop of all time.
That's painful. And I will make a note to myself to look up the New York Times review of the previews, because I bet it's actually brutal. And I do love a scathing Ben Brantley review. Because I bet he was writing at that point. I bet that would be him, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Question for you, Liza. Why do you think the people running Riverdale chose Carrie the Musical? What do you think is the connection there?
I think, you know, if you're going for, they are so clearly trying to reinvent the tone of Archie as something like dark and spooky, which is, of course, like so bizarre and antithetical to the source material that they're going off of. But, you know, if you're trying to think of like a tortured high school child with like major horrible problems that become like, I don't know, you know, you think of Carrie. You know what I'm getting. Mm-hmm. You think of Carrie. Carrie is like an iconic high school like spook thing. It's been around forever. There's references to it in everything all the time.
Absolutely.
So it does make sense as a choice. I'm actually going to give them that. This is a sensible choice. It also a bit to me screams like high school. I went to a high school that almost exclusively performed Broadway flops because they're way cheaper.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm sure that
kind of worked for me too.
I'm sure that was some of the reasoning behind, you know, getting the rights to the Carrie musical, which, you know, they probably did not have to spend a lot on.
Yeah. The CW is famously broke and largely because of Riverdale, but that's a different
thing. Is that true? I actually don't know much about that. Did Riverdale break the CW's bank?
I don't know that it was Riverdale, to be honest. It could have also been Supernatural, I guess. But
or like the Flash or Arrow shows.
Yeah, yeah. But famously, the CW is broke and they still insist on doing Riverdale. So.
Anyway. Well, let's get into the episode, shall we?
Yeah, why not?
It kind of starts right in. Obviously, it has the crazy previously on that you referred to before, which is bonkers to try to keep up with. But we go straight into musical numbers. And I'm curious to hear overall, what did you think about, I guess, the music itself in this show?
I'm a big fan of shows that don't just rely on we're performing a musical within the show. I'm always a big fan of we sing these songs extracurricularly, as it were. Like, it's diegetic to the universe instead of just being something everybody sings.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because the diegesis of this is somewhat confusing to me. I think in a way that, like, a lot of these things are often confusing. But, you know, most of the songs, everybody knows they're singing them because they're singing them in a production of the show. But like the opening number, these people are just singing. So like we go back and forth between diegetic and non-diegetic singing throughout the whole thing.
Which is great. And again, like Riverdale is extremely chaotic to watch. Like this is like, I lost count of the number of scenes that are in this 42-minute episode of television. I would honestly guess like 40. Like it's truly crazy. And we also have like multiple framing devices in this one episode. I think like we open on Jughead being asked if he'll be the official documentarian.
Yes.
Because, you know, like how every high school musical has a documentarian. Like, obviously, we all did that. That's super normal.
Yeah.
He also like knows what he's like. I know what you're going to ask. You're going to ask like, what? Yeah, it's a very chaotic episode. And I think the like diegetic running into non-diegetic, running back into diegetic really works for me in that way.
The one part that I had a huge question mark with that too is when the mom is singing about Carrie at one point and then just changes the name.
To Betty.
Yeah, to Betty.
Oh, God. Yeah, first of all, there's an adult in
this musical. Yeah, let's just go backwards.
We have to address that. There's an adult in this musical. Betty's mom is asked to join the cast because I believe Kevin, our director, says that there's nothing as amateur as age-inappropriate casting. Okay, fine. So we brought Betty's mom in, Mansion Amick from Twin Peaks, for those of us who were stans.
Yeah, shout out.
She's not really that great, but no. She is in this musical, and she mentions it to another adult at some point who doesn't react.
No reaction at all. It's just like, I don't want to talk to you. Can you please leave my diner?
Making it seem like these are shenanigans that she's up to all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, what that implies is that that doesn't even register for that man. He's exactly. Like, of course you're in the High School Musical.
Exactly.
God. Yeah, so like she does have a moment where she's singing a song to Carrie and then she changes the name Carrie to Betty, her daughter. One of the problems with this, it felt like a problem in the editing or something, because mm-hmm. everybody acts like she's not supposed to be singing at all.
Yeah.
Like, the reaction comes way too early from the entire audience. They're all just like shocked at her as she's saying her regular lines in the show instead of when she switches it to Betty. It becomes very tonally confusing.
Exactly.
Didn't get that.
No, I mean, tonally confusing, I think, is just a good way to sum up this this whole episode. Like you said, we're cutting back and forth between things. We have two different mediums upon which we're filming it. And, you know, I'm kind of here for that on some level. A musical episode should be kind of crazy, but I do feel like we lose a sense of arc in the show. If there is an arc in this episode.
Is there one? Well, I mean, actually, you know what? There are arcs. I would argue there are season-long arcs within this episode.
Great.
Like, people undergo character transformations that would take any other show 22 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, my favorite character on this show, which will shock no one, is Cheryl. She's the greatest thing that's ever happened to television. I am obsessed with her.
Mm-hmm.
So Cheryl is our wealthy, like very privileged, very like weird and kind of like off-putting redheaded girl. She, what is her? Cheryl Blossom. That is mm-hmm. her name. I don't even know if she's in the comic. I actually don't. I've never really read Archie comics beyond like what was in the paper sometimes. Like,
right.
I don't
I've never read Archie. At all.
I remember almost nothing about Archie comics. I'm not sure Cheryl's in it, but Cheryl is an extremely chaotic presence on this program.
Incredibly chaotic.
Like, she's something that would on another show be a Cordelia Chase,
uh-huh.
but has become corrupted into being fully insane. She's like if Cordelia Chase was really supposed to be on meds that she wasn't taking.
Sure, sure,
like,
sure.
It's that same level of like in your face, upfront, saying exactly what she means, but with this added spice of like chaos that
yeah.
she's just going to say anything. And it's amazing.
It must be so much fun to write for her.
It has to be the most fun to write. I mean, like, honestly, this show has to be the most fun to write because it's just like there are no rules. It feels mm-hmm. like these writers created a universe where they could do whatever the fuck they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I mm-hmm. honestly applaud it. It's very fun to watch. Cheryl starts this episode like with her really apathetic lip syncing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good time. But like she goes from in the beginning of this episode kind of like afraid of her mother and like having this conversation with her mother in the hall that she forces Kevin to sit down for. She like holds him down to like must witness it, and then like at the end has done a full carry herself.
Yeah.
Like she comes and confronts her mother in their big spooky house and like threatens to murder her.
Yeah.
Covered in blood. It's great stuff.
We should say, for those of you keeping track at home, Cheryl is originally cast as Carrie in this high school production of Carrie the musical.
No audition. It's very important that nobody auditioned for this.
No one auditioned.
Typecasting.
And typecasting probably correctly, you know,
very
on some
correctly.
Level.
I mean, we mentioned, I had a count at some point. Let me try to find it. I think I've mentioned at least 6 separate times how well everybody is cast in their specific role. The parallels are something I love about this show is that there is no subtext. There
yes.
is only text. People just say what they mean. It's amazing.
Exactly. But she doesn't stay as Carrie just because there is like a Phantom of the Opera-esque bad guy. And I was thinking about this too. I think the show kind of suffers, or this episode kind of suffers from us never seeing that bad guy ever in the whole episode and not knowing what the motivations. Yeah, we have no idea what this person wants.
His motivations are actually profoundly unclear because in the Phantom of the Opera, he's like in love with Christine. That's his
right.
motive. Also, he like does live in the opera.
Yes, he is the Phantom
life,
of
right?
the Opera. Yeah.
Of the Opera. That's his whole thing. This is an actual serial killer that is running around town named the Black Hood. He's a whole season long arc beforehand. We all think he's dead before this episode. That's also important. but he starts writing spooky ransom notes to Kevin, our hapless little director who can't get a hold of what's going on stage at all sometimes. What's baffling also is not only does he not have motive, he doesn't really have demands besides that they recast Cheryl. It's not a you must cast. We replace Cheryl with someone named Midge Klump. Oof. Oh God, sorry girl, sorry yeah. that's on your acting resume for like the rest of ever.
Well yeah, because spoiler alert, she dies at the end of this.
She does die at the end of this episode.
because the hood is still upset.
Still with this recasting. You needed to be more specific. If you didn't want Midge either,
yeah.
You need to say who you want, like the Phantom. There's no excuse, because this man, like, this is a universe where Phantom of the Opera exists, because
right.
Jughead mentions that this is a full Phantom of the Opera mm-hmm. that's happening. Like, he brings it up. So this person must have seen Phantom of the Opera and therefore knows what needs to be in that kind of letter in order for it to work.
Exactly. Know? To this serial killer's credit, if you have to replace Carrie with another actress and you replace it with some girl named Midge Klump, you might be a little bit upset about that.
I mean, yeah. I'd be pretty annoyed. I mean, we do kind of set up that Ethel would be the obvious choice.
Right.
But still, again, the motivations for a grown man, becoming involved in this like high school level production of Carrie the Musical is wildly unclear.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm going to, you know, someone is like firing up their fucking thumbs to tell us that like it is explained in a later episode why they were so invested. But I would argue that's probably, knowing this show, they might not ever bring it up again. They do just drop things all the time.
That is the thing. I feel like I got no explanations for any of the questions throughout.
No,
this.
I don't think this show is in the business of answering questions. That's not something that they do. So it's either never brought up again, or the justification is still not strong enough again for an adult man to kill a high schooler.
Right. Yeah, it's not like it's small questions too. It's like the big question of why is this happening in the first place?
Yeah, why was it Pearl murdered?
Yeah.
Like there's no justification for this. Like, she wasn't a good enough Carrie.
Exactly.
Very rude. It's a very bad reason to kill someone.
Yeah, I want to get back to the music, because we can't talk about Cheryl without talking about her singing, which is some mix between screaming and auto-tune.
Yeah. So she's a very small girl. The actress Madeline Petch. I actually don't know how to say her last name. She's tiny. She's like petite in every sense of the word. She's the littlest little thing you've ever seen. And she's lip syncs very apathetically. So what you end up getting is this tiny person just opening her mouth, and there's like a full on forte like scream coming out of it. There's no modulation of like volume. There's nothing. She's just like seems to be screaming with no effort whatsoever.
Yes.
It's very, very strange to look at. It's a very jarring thing.
It should be said that she is far, well, maybe not far and away the worst. Margaret White's also not great. But, like, for the most part, she's the worst vocally. I think Betty and Veronica are fine. I think, like, a lot of people are passable. And I think part of why the Carrie musical might have been a good choice, too, is it's not very vocally demanding, at least the songs that they chose. Mm-hmm. And I kind of respect that on some level, but that screaming auto-tune was a bit much.
It's really tough. It's very tough. It's very, like, shiny glee. I felt glee all over it.
Totally. Totally.
The shame, really, for me, it's mostly comedic until we have a duet with her and Josie.
Yeah.
Who can sing. And that's when it becomes hurtful, because Josie's doing a really good job. And she's being fully drowned out. Also, to go back to this age inappropriate casting thing that I was so on about, Josie is playing an adult in this show. So again, like, we've cast this show full of high schoolers with one adult, except the rest of the high schoolers are playing adults. It makes it much weirder. You have to go all in or all out on that. You actually have to hire adults or you hire all children. You
yeah, it doesn't one. Make any sense.
It's way too weird.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, that duet is especially rough. Like, Josie starts it singing, like, just, like, very softly and tender. And, like, the lip syncing is good. Like, everything is just totally passable and good about it. And then, what's her name? Cheryl just goes, like, that's how it starts. Like, just shouts it out, so like, out of nowhere. It's so bad.
It's real bad.
And you have this fun counterpoint of, like, just really nice, tender, controlled singing and, like, screaming auto-tune. And they're, like, mad at each other during the song and they make up. But I don't think those actors ever really made up from that moment. They seem
still pretty tense, actually. I got the impression that those two people didn't like each other very much. I mean, there are a few duets in this. The other one would be the Archie and Betty one, mm-hmm. where we quickly sub out Archie. Yes. We take him off the field pretty quickly
Make it a Betty Veronica.
And make it a Betty Veronica. A choice I agree with, because in terms of if we were to tier all the vocal performances here, Archie's is not my favorite.
No. I mean, we know Archie is really failing in the dancing department.
Or is he killing it? I think there's an argument to say that he is the best dancer in
this. Listen, let's talk about it, because actually the dancing is something that I really appreciate out of this episode, because they do it. They have full-on dance numbers. It feels very high school theater dancing.
We've got like sort of people in the back popping their hip, and then we've got a dance core that's actually doing complicated stuff.
Yes.
The only time I think that falls apart entirely is when Veronica basically gives that guy Chuck like a lap dance.
Hey, Kevin's obsessed with it. Kevin loved that direction that he gave, I guess. I guess he's doing choreo, too.
I guess he's also doing choreo. I don't know. There are no teachers. I am still confused, like, what is even going on? This doesn't seem to be a class, but then he didn't audition anyone, so is it a club? Nobody knows.
Also, to get everybody to agree to this, too, like, all these students to be like, yeah, I'm going to invest in this musical.
Again, without auditioning them. Mm-hmm. Nobody auditioned to be in the show.
Liza, I totally buried the lead here. I forgot to tell you this.
Oh my God.
In promo for this episode, they apparently released cast bios of each character.
No.
It's not as good as it sounds. Most of it is pretty dumb. But one of the things that they did have that was really good is that the only person who actually had listed like stage credits was Veronica. She said she was Evita in Evita, Velma in Chicago, and Maria in West Side Story. It's very good.
That is phenomenal. That is extremely powerful.
The other good thing they have in the bios is that some people are like, hugs and kisses too, and then it's redacted. You know, it's like big blackout.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's pretty silly. I like that kind of promo, though.
That's great. That's great promo. Hugely delighted by that, actually.
But yeah, anyway, to say the dancing's pretty good. Archie's dancing is incredibly bad to the point where it circles back around.
Yeah, exactly. It circles back around. I argue that it would circle back around into being incredible. It's really, his movements are really exaggerated. My note says white man shoulders. Like, he's doing a lot of work in the shoulders that doesn't need to be there. It's very cheesy. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, Archie's the cheesiest character. Yeah. I mean, especially if you're going back to the Archie comic, like, from what I do remember of the Archie comics, is Archie's sort of nothing. Like,
right.
He kind of barely exists. Like, he does, his big problem in life seems to be choosing between Betty and Veronica. And all of the shenanigans that happen to him are instigated mostly by Jughead and other people. Like, he doesn't seem to have much of an inner life. Mm-hmm. He's sort of like a yellow lab wandering through life in the mm-hmm. comics. So I was sort of like, this was a whole moment for me, like watching him do this dance so terribly, where I was just like, is this going to be like our are we eventually going to come around on KJ Apa in the way we came around on Kristen Stewart and Bella Swan, where we're like, actually, the being dead inside is the only choice to make for this character. If you read the book, like, was this actually such a brilliant performance that it seemed bad? Is it the Nick Cage of musical performance? You know,
I'm going to say no. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I will say, I think his dancing is so bad that it is funny and I do have a better time because of it, right? But it does like completely distract from everything else that's happening.
It's wildly distracting. Wildly. It's in one of their many, many rehearsals off book and in full costume.
Yes, so off book in costume with tech.
Yeah, that seems to be the only way anybody rehearses except for Cheryl, who is never in costume, but everybody else only rehearses in full costume, hair and makeup, all of it.
Yes, things that would outrage people like you and I who are tortured theater kids. You know, none of this stuff seems realistic in the casting, in no auditions, in, you know, Kevin saying 10 minutes to places and nobody says nobody thank you 10. Places. Not a goddamn nobody person.
Nobody says thank you 10. Unbelievable. Honestly, honestly, that if Kevin is revealed to be the Black Hood, that would be motive. Ooh. That's the best motive in the show.
Ooh, I'm here for it.
It's like nobody said thank you 10. He does get disrespected multiple times.
Multiple times.
This episode. Yes. Mostly by Cheryl, who he eventually says, Cheryl, I'm the director. You can't just say stop whenever you want to. Huge fan of Cheryl. Huge fan. Can't overstate how much of a fan I am, honestly.
She has some of the most killer lines in this whole show. Like,
and I will say, every episode I've seen of this show, Cheryl runs away with the best lines.
Yeah.
Like, she's the most fun.
She says something about like thespian terrorism or something like that.
Yes, hold on. I have this.
Yeah, pull it up.
Because it was so incredible. So this is like the whole confrontation with her mother that we mentioned before. So her mom comes in and like forbids her from being in the musical. Kevin is there. He doesn't want to be, but Cheryl will not let him leave. But yeah, Kevin is trying to tell Cheryl she's out because at first of the Phantom of the Opera letter. But she will not succumb to thespian terrorism because after the fires I've walked through, Kevin, the world needs to see me up on that stage. A dark phoenix born again in the spotlight. Imagine responding that way to someone not casting you in a show. And her mom, again, it seems like she gets it from her mom, because then her mom immediately comes in and says the reason she's pulling her from the show is that she won't let her daughter live out this matricidal revenge.
Yes. Oh my God.
So it does seem like that is how people talk at Cheryl's house. It seems like that is just the Blossoms speak to each other.
Right.
That seems to be like their dialect.
Language like informs culture.
Affected. Yeah.
I see. Yeah.
Because they're so wealthy. You know how wealthy people talk?
Oh my God.
You know how all wealthy people sound like that?
Yeah, all of them. Yeah. All of them. I was going to say, she has big, what's her name's mom in Teen Wolf? Allison's mom in Teen Wolf.
Oh my God.
Big,
yes.
Allison's mom from Teen Wolf energy.
Big Mrs. Argent energy. Victoria Argent.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
Wow, I didn't know I had that, actually.
Some things, they just stick with you.
Some things, they just stick. That woman was so needlessly terrifying.
Yes.
Oh, I wish we could talk about Teen Wolf on this show. A real shame that there's a musical episode.
Hey, Teen Wolf producers, if you're listening, get us to do a musical episode for you.
Hey, Davies, call me. Call me. I'm begging. Lydia doing It's the Little Things You Do Together would kill me. Sorry.
Whoa.
Moving on. I'm so sorry I interrupted you.
We need a whole new podcast for this. We should just do one episode of how we would cast everybody in Teen Wolf and what songs we'd have them sing.
We're using Company.
I don't even have words. I can't. The idea of any of those teens being like contemplating marriage is something else.
I'm just like, I pictured Derek singing Being Alive and it actually killed me, so I can't move on. Also, the idea that he even has, I'm crying, the idea that he like even has a chair to sit in when we know that he lives in like a burnt out family home. Right.
Anyway. Oh my god.
Oh my god. True fans like, will know we're obsessed
also,
with people.
In this universe, if Derek is the main character, they're throwing a surprise party for him every year.
Which is so good, because the only surprise party they ever threw for Derek was not for him. It's when they threw that rave in his apartment when he's not there, because he's passed out on the ground outside and nobody shows up to check on him. Amazing.
All right, well, we got our Teen Wolf segment in. I'm glad
we got the obligatory mention of Teen Wolf, because it's all we actually ever want to talk about. But I will say, like, in terms of like chaotic teen energy, Riverdale does fill a gap for me sometimes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there are just those notes of like these insane dynamics that are way too adult for 16-year-olds to be experiencing with each other.
Yes.
And like the brazen villainy of fucking Veronica's family in this.
Yes.
Oh my god, I've never seen a more coded villain family in my life.
100%. That Zad is so evil. He's constantly in all black or like, you know, grays or dark blues and like constantly sipping whiskey and being like, I have an evil plan.
And it's important to say, like, these scenes go so fast that it's really hard to establish how long any episode is taking. Like, is this the same day? Is this at the same time? Like, it's really, I can't tell you if this rehearsal process was 4 days or 4 months.
Yes.
Truly no clue. And part of that confusion comes, like, I feel like for some of these to work, it feels like he's like drinking a scotch straight up at like 11 a.m.
Like this is breakfast.
This is breakfast, dude. And you're like plotting with your wife. He has like some crazy line. What does he say about like, in keeping with the theme for this week, I thought of something devious to do. Like, what?
Yeah. And his devious thing is just like telling Archie's dad that he bought him a car, you know, like,
yeah,
it's so
like,
silly.
You know how, like, you get in someone's head by telling them you bought their son a car? There's, like, so much going on.
I did want to talk about this concept, though, of, like, taking these songs from Carrie the Musical and loosely tying them into the subject matter of the episode. I'm thinking specifically of A Night We'll Never Forget, where they're clearly singing about prom, but they're in the episode singing about having opening night. None of it translates at all.
It doesn't really work. There's also, I think I'm so distracted for this whole number by the fact that there's an adult in this dressing room for teenagers.
Yes.
It's very upsetting, and they really do want me to just look past it. That's hard.
Because the boys are talking about how excited they are to get laid and how much they've spent on the clothes that they obviously shouldn't have spent money on.
Yeah,
for.
No, that should be provided.
And this mother is like, yep, I agree. We've paid for these clothes. We should be getting sex. And it's like, that doesn't make sense.
It's like, no. You are not allowed to be in this song. yes, it's very, very weird. Oh my god, not to go back to Cheryl. Everything
Please.
Always comes back to Cheryl for me.
Please.
She's so important. We have to talk about the scene where she confronts her mom. We have to, because it is like actually so fully, it's during this song.
It's in the it's middle this of this song. They in cut the to like this funky kind of verse that I listened to the actual track from Carrie the Musical and it's like a seamless transition. It's still kind of a weird B theme. But in this episode, it's just like they had no transition. They just went into a funky bass line. And she's here confronting
her
mom.
I'm never complaining about a funky bass line. I'm always excited to hear one.
I think I am.
For well, again, what did we say this was? Tonally confusing.
Yes, yes, like, that's true.
All it is. It's like suddenly we're doing a funky bass line and we just see Cheryl pulling up to her mother, her home, Thornhill, this big, like, no, it's not Thornhill because she burned Thornhill down.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a different house. And she pulls up in like her little slip, very like Carrie's dress in the movie, like slip long dress, and, you know, pours blood on herself and goes in to confront mom.
Yeah, pours blood on herself. Seems incredibly unnecessary to have to do that part, right?
Absolutely crazy. And here's the thing, this scene for me, like, it's very Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm.
There are like multiple Shakespearean references in the span of like about 2 seconds. So she's like covered in blood and she comes in and like, first of all, she accuses her mom of being in cahoots with daddy's twin. That's what she says.
Mm-hmm.
But then we learn that her uncle is named Claudius. So she's confronting her mom about her uncle Claudius. Like, I wonder where we see that before. And then she says that they tried to ship her off to a ghoulish nunnery. So now she's Ophelia, who was shipped off to a ghoulish nunnery. And then, like, there's you know, the iconic appearance of someone showing up during dinner as a fucking covered in blood is Banquo's ghost. So it is like this crazy, she's holding like this candelabra coming in full on Banquo's ghost. It's like one of the most incredible things I've ever seen someone do. And then she's like, I already burned one house.
Yeah, let me do another.
And then her mom, I think, has the only response that anyone could possibly have, which is she calls her a nightmare child.
Yeah, she screams it. Nightmare child.
I'm like, honestly, that is a nightmare child.
Yes.
Like, imagine your kid doing that to you.
Imagine. Hey, imagine. Get her on The Bachelor. I want to see her on reality TV. That'd be incredible.
It would be amazing. I was just watching Too Hot to Handle. Can you imagine Cheryl?
Oh my god. They would have to add like, hey, no hooking up with other contestants or killing them. That's also a punishment.
That's what Cheryl would do. Oh, the only other line I wanted to mention is that at one point Kevin is confiding in Jughead and he said, like, because they get that second letter, Blackhead. And
he says,
official documentarian, you are sworn to secrecy, which we just like, that's like.
They love to pose lines like they're facts, right?
Yes.
Because we all know that this is true. So let's continue with this.
It's very only Sith's deal in absolutes. Like, it's we really like just like throw lines out like they mean things. It's really crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think we're ready to score this puppy up.
Absolutely. Let's do it. So starting with general vibes, when we're thinking general vibes, we're thinking, you know, how much do we enjoy it? Has it aged well? Are there any problematic things? Is it just a good episode of TV?
This is so hard because almost, if we can use Archie's dancing as a metaphor, that's almost how this whole show works. Is it kind of recurses back in on itself, very Ouroboros, like eats its own tail, in a way where like it is so terrible that I'm having an excellent time the whole episode. That's not deniable.
Yes.
You know?
I totally feel that 100%. I don't think there's anything that's particularly problematic with it, too, which is kind of nice. You love to see that happen.
I don't think there's, I mean, it's not like the most, it's not a terribly inclusive show. It's not inclusive. We'll throw that out there. But there's no, like, really, I mean, the only truly offensive thing is when nobody says thank you, Ten.
I do have to dock points for it.
It really harshes the vibe pretty hard, I would say.
I'm good with a 9. I could give it a strong 9 there.
I think a 9 is totally fair.
Amazing.
Totally fair.
Let's talk about the music. Yeah, what do you think about the music there? And of course, you know, this is found music. It's from another show. Mm-hmm. The arrangements are pretty much the same from the actual musical itself. They take out a lot of the harmonies, but they keep some harmonies in, which I'm happy about.
Yeah, there's nothing I love more than, like, there's a great little moment where I believe it's Betty and Veronica during their little duet where Veronica, like, apathetically joins in on a harmony. That's, like, my favorite thing someone can do is, like, offhand, just add their own melodic line. I love that. Love when someone begrudgingly does a harmony. That did give me a lot of joy.
And I gotta say, you know, the auto-tune is egregious, right? But it's so clear that the creators are going, this is the best thing we can do with this, you know, these people's singing ability. And I have a deep appreciation for, like, let's make it listenable. Let's make it something somewhere listenable. Close to the pitch.
Yeah, it is listenable, even if it's just a huge yell auto-tuned howl. It's listenable.
Yeah.
I still, again, because it's found music,
right?
Not going to rate it super highly. And they didn't do anything interesting about arrangement. I do feel sometimes, so to counterpoint your point about listenability, actually, sometimes I really just wish Riverdale seems to, and we'll see this in other episodes probably, they really don't seem to want to adapt songs to who they're for.
Yes.
This is a relatively easy show in general. So that's part of it. But we don't want to transpose. We're not changing any model. We're not like really working to find something our actors can do. Mm-hmm. We're just saying we'll do what we can and fix it in post, which is a little annoying to me.
Yeah, totally. I mean, nobody is screlting, right? Nobody is singing out of their register. So they are adapting in that sense, but you're right. It's not interesting. You know, it's not anything that's thematically interesting, especially too.
Yeah. I'm okay with like a 4 or something. 4 sounds good to me. Yeah. Okay.
4 sounds reasonable. Yeah. Picking up off of that, we got lyrics next.
Mm-hmm.
Lyrics, like we said before, sometimes they really don't match the subject matter.
Yeah. So like the opening song, I felt so disappointed because that opening song, I thought they did really well.
I agree.
Matching lyrics to who they're for. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like we're already integrating it into the show. We're doing a great job. But then, yeah, by the end of that show, I mean, that last number about opening night, we talked about it. It's like wildly inappropriate.
Yeah, totally. So,
I wasn't huge on this. It's somewhere in the middle for me. Not super high, though.
Yeah, maybe like a 3 or a 4. I could go with either of those.
Let's give it a 4. Let's do another 4. I like 4s today.
Okay. Yeah, I feel that. Dancing. I think dancing's pretty strong, right?
Obviously, I really do.
We know where the dancing was weakest, and did it overall or was strengthen? It the strongest?
I think there's an argument here. It was amazing. It was terrible, but I loved it. No, the dancing, like we said, I think more than anything, the dancing is, except for that weird moment where we're lap dancing, appropriate. It feels like high school choreo in a way that was really kind of fun to watch.
Yeah.
I had a good time with it. I would rate this pretty highly.
Yeah, I'd give it a 9. I think it's strong. I don't think perfect, but I think that's also what makes it pretty strong as well too, is that it's not
exactly perfect. we're not pretending that we go to a high school full of like a Broadway level dancing choir. We don't. We go to high school, so we're gonna have some people who can do slightly more complicated things, and then we're gonna have a bunch of people in the back who can't do anything at all. I love that.
Exactly.
And we have that opening number where we're all at an AA meeting.
Like yeah, doing off. A bunch of chairography in an chairography. AA meeting circle. It's very good.
I was big on it. Yeah, I think 9 is a really good choice.
Cool. Performances, vocal performances, acting performances. What do you think there, Liza?
Oof. Again, like this really so varies. We have such a wide range within this. Again, Archie is the X factor of like, is he doing a great job or a terrible job? I still really can't tell. But, you know, like we said, we've mentioned Madchen Amick, who plays Betty's mom. She's not, like, the best singer. I do think she's doing a passable job at, like, the acting job she's given.
Yeah, everybody's doing more or less the job that they should be doing on this show. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't supposed to be, I don't know, Chernobyl or something. Like, people aren't supposed to be giving incredible performances.
Picturing a Skarsgård walking through this
Yeah, exactly. This is supposed to be some angsty teen stuff where people are shouting every 2 minutes.
And generally, people are nailing that, honestly. Yeah. I do want to knock points because of like the heavy use of auto-tune.
Yes, 100%.
I think the singing performances, I mean, like, I don't know, there's something. I mean, we didn't cast a musical show, right? We cast a regular show. Not everybody is a singer. That's totally fine. Some people are like we said, Betty and Veronica really hold their own.
Josie's great.
Josie's great, but most people are not singers, and that's okay. But
the thing that's crazy though is I know you told this to me off camera that a couple of people are singers in this show. You know, are a couple of talented people who don't get lines.
Yeah. So like Kevin will be in later episodes singing quite a lot because he and Ethel both get like one line in this and they're actually both pretty good singers.
Crazy.
So they're not 100% utilizing their cast as well as they should. I will say they'll redeem themselves in later seasons. Kevin like gets like the lead, casts himself as the lead in like a musical, which is rude, but he is the most talented.
Yeah, makes sense. We've all been there. We've all done that.
Yeah, we've all done it. We've all done it. And again, he doesn't like to audition, I guess. He's anti-auditions.
But yeah, I'm feeling a six on performance. It's barely passing. It's barely above middle for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's totally fair.
Let's talk about the writing.
So a lot of that performance score has to do with people are being given insane things to say and do. I mean, absolutely just insane. Like this show, again, we talked about like the heavy exposition. Everybody delivers at least one enormous expositional drop at some point. People just say things like, as official documentarian, you are sworn to secrecy. This is just something that happens in this show. The thing about it is I love it, but it is objectively, if we're trying to be objective, the writing is terrible.
It's objectively bad. Yeah.
It's objectively awful. That is not a reflection of vibe. Again, vibe still got a very high score.
Vibe is strong.
But objectively, the writing on this is, I would not be shocked if someone told me that this was the first ever show written by an AI. Like, if that, like, came I out, would be shocked. I would actually believe it.
I would be shocked because they have these random gems of Cheryl's lines being so ridiculous that they're great.
Well, we're feeding it different things for Cheryl. Obviously. We fed the Cheryl AI Shakespeare at some point that vomited it out today. The Cheryl AI is different and a little more sophisticated than everybody else's AI.
Yeah. Also, through the writing, they really didn't do enough to justify a Carrie musical here. Like, I don't know where they're connecting the songs together, how the scenes are connected at all, you know, and the antagonist like not having really a presence at all,
presence or a discernible motive from your murderer are actually pretty two pretty essential.
I mean, Phantom of the Opera is literally the title. Like,
and he's the main character. I mean, he's the main character, but he is like a very central character.
I would go with like a two.
Oh, yeah, it's brutal, but it's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're here to do. We're brutal. We'll give it fair.
The 2 points are all Cheryl. We have to be clear about that. The 2 points are all Cheryl. Yes, everybody else gets a zero. Cheryl gets it. I mean, maybe Jughead gets like a half of one of those points because every once in a while he'll say excellent to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Direction. We're thinking, you know, cinematography. We're thinking blocking, how things are framed and edited. Mm-hmm. What do you think there, Liza?
Well, we have something chaotic going on here in that we have the framing device of the documentary.
Yes.
That's also going on during this episode, which is almost like if we're doing like a murderer thing or what are we trying to do? Like the Blair Witch Project? Like, why is this happening? I'm still like confused as to why that choice. It felt like was that we had to get Cole Sprouse into the room because he's a character and he refused to do the musical. That's my theory on this.
I think you're right.
Is that as a former Disney child, he has it somewhere in his rider that he doesn't fucking sing. Like, that is contract. And he had to be in the episode somehow because he's arguably one of the most interesting characters on the show. He's also a Sprouse.
He's a Sprouse. I could see him, you know, having to sing on Disney for some kind of reason and going never again.
411 bullshit and saying, I'm never doing this again. And putting that into his contract for the rest of forever.
I do love a big swing, and I love that they went with this choice of doing this and making it weird.
It's weird. I don't know that it's justified. I did enjoy it. I did have a fun time with it. There's like something very strange about it existing, but it was fun.
And I thought overall the blocking is pretty good, right? Like, I think the way they've placed people in shots and the way they've, you know, it kind of goes back to the choreo too. I think it's always hard to capture theater on camera. And I think they mostly do it, right?
I think they mostly do it. I think the like art direction of the musical theater scenes works really well. Like for the most part, like this is a school that has money. This is not your average public school. We know that. But they do like seem to have like things you could wheel on and off set. Like we don't have like big expensive sets. We have like, you know, I'm sure that the staircase turns around and is the high school, right? Like it felt kind of like the sets that you can kind of build in a high school, which I liked.
Yeah.
I think the only moment that the blocking, again, Ouroboros, either really works for me or really doesn't work for me is the scene where we, as official documentarian, are trying to get Ethel to confess that she sent the letter, and Jughead is just in the window with his little camera.
So stupid.
Like that blocking is so like, it's really overt, but that is somewhat of the charm of this show, is everything about it is so
no
overt.
Subtlety.
None. None. It's great. It's really relaxing. I don't know. To me, it kind of has like a, I'm not sure I should say this. To me, the show almost comforts me in the way that I find Jason Mantzoukas comforting.
Oh, shit.
In that it is loud and just like screams exactly what it thinks all the time and like wildly unpredictable. But because it's so apparent, because everything on it is happening in such an honest way, I can kind of relax. Like, I'm not worried about ulterior motives. Like, something about it actually relaxes me.
I think it's a good take.
This is the Jason Mantzoukas of teen television.
I'm a Jason Mantzoukas apologist.
I'm a Jason Mantzoukas straight up enthusiast.
Yes,
slash
amazing.
Stan. I fucking love that guy.
He's the best.
That is actually the greatest compliment I could ever pay this show. That's honestly, it might be too nice is the problem.
It might be a little bit. I could go with a 7. I think we've said more positive things than negative things.
I think so too. I think it's middle of the road, maybe a little bit above middle of the road.
All right, commitment. How much does it commit to a TV musical episode, to the concept of a musical?
It commits pretty hard.
It commits pretty hard, right?
We have like 8 songs or something like that. Like that's a pretty solid number.
That's a lot of numbers, honestly.
Yeah, that's pretty solid for a 42-minute episode, because like most of them are, you know, not all of them are full songs, most of them are snippets, but
they almost commit too hard to a musical in exchange for any semblance of plot, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. There's wow, there's so much happening and yet nothing happening. It's very weird, like quantum state of plot movement.
Yeah. It's not original music. It's all found music, which, you know, I think takes a point off at least for me.
Sure.
But I think it commits pretty hard.
I think it commits pretty hard. Yeah. We do songs on stage and songs off stage.
Yeah.
I'd give this like a solid like 8 or 9.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do a 9. I feel good with that. Right. Let's talk about the stakes.
Stakes. Well,
incredibly high and also meaningless.
Which is the problem with Riverdale, is like everything is so crazy and so important that like this, the new normal for stakes is much higher than on most shows.
Yeah. But could a person skip this episode and still be okay watching
Riverdale? That's the big question. That's always a big question. I feel like it's hard for me to answer that because I intentionally always don't watch episodes, so I don't know what it would be like for Riverdale to make sense. That's like never happened to me. But like someone does die. I mean,
that's true.
Mitch Clump is fucking killed at the end of the, in front of like everyone. Like we end this show with like a girl dead on stage. Fucking Cheryl asking, Kevin, did you reblock this?
Dead body on stage. Ridiculous.
Incredible. Amazing. Never change. Never change.
The stakes have to be pretty high. I think this is a high ranking.
I think this is a high rank. Even for Riverdale, this seems like very people, I don't think people die every episode. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I give it like an 8.
Yeah.
I think an 8 sounds
good. I think that seems fair. All right. The personal ranking.
We're going to differ on this.
I think we are. Should we say this at the same time, or do you want to say yours first? Do you want to give a pitch to make me increase my score?
I'm going to pitch.
Yeah, please.
We all had a great time, okay? We all had a great time, and if you buy into my theory of Archie and via Archie the rest of Riverdale being an Ouroboros, like being so much so in your face that it somehow grows an inner life from that. Yeah, I mean, I think this ranks pretty highly. I think this is a really, this is an extremely watchable episode of television. Extremely watchable.
Yes. So I agree with all of those things. It is very much a good time. I don't think that means it's good, right? Like, is it successful as a musical episode? Would I go to someone and say, hey, you know what's a good musical episode? What really embraces that medium well? It's this show. But it's not the worst. Right, I will say it's not the worst, right?
Yeah, no, certainly not. Certainly not.
Yeah, I have my score.
Okay, so let's just say them on three. Huh? Okay. One, two, three, eight.
Four.
Those are very different numbers.
That's why we both get a vote. But that splits it down to a 6.
Ooh, I love a good round split on something like that. It's always really very pleasing.
What does that bring our grand total to, Liza?
That brings our grand total out of 100 to 55, which I think is appropriate.
That's super good.
Almost exact center, but a little above. I think actually that is correct. That number makes sense to me.
Amazing. Yeah, any last thoughts before we wrap up here?
Oh, God. So many. I think my thing is that if someone listens to this show and has not watched this episode, just get a little drunk or a little high and do it. You're not gonna regret it. It's so weird. Just like embrace like how chaotic it's going to be and just enjoy yourself. Like this is again like a really watchable episode of TV for me. And not all of these are watchable.
Agreed.
I think we've run into several that are not. So to me, this was very refreshing.
I second everything you say. And also, dear listener, if you do decide to watch this, just get like a sheet of all the characters' names and pictures of them, because you're going to be lost.
There must be a face sheet somewhere online. Pull up IMDb, have it up the whole time, because people will just mention people who are not in the room all the time. I think like Veronica at one point says, our dads are literal rivals.
And then you could have your like little cork board with like all of the stuff up and the strings with each other, with literal rivals next to each other.
All right. So with 64, Riverdale's coming in right in the middle of the pack right now. It is our new number 5. So shaking up the top 5, right above Andy's Play and right below My Musical from Scrubs.
Very good. We'll see if this top 5 shakes up any more. Next week, we'll see you once more with season 4, episode 18 of Futurama, entitled The Devil's Hands Are Idle Playthings.
You can find this episode on Hulu.
Thank you, as always, to Olivia Braslovsky, our angelic audio architect, and to Sakana Powell, our debonair digital designer.
If you like the show, please be sure to rate and review us. If you don't, keep that to yourself. You can find us on Instagram at Once More With TV, or contact us using the information in the show notes.
And scene.